to such a nice meeting. I must say that I'm really impressed with the, until now at least, by the quality of the talks. This talk will be very well, very much related to the talk of Michel. And in fact, I met Michel, I think, 3 years ago, and we talked a lot about things concerning broadening bridges. And I invited him to go to the lab, and I had the idea that he would work with me on the subject. And as a matter of fact, he did not. But it seems that now our paths are crossing again, so maybe I hope that I will be able to drag him to this field. So before really entering into what is the subject, what the structure itself, I want to say a few words about the motivation of the talk. And the motivation of the talk, they come from the thing that we were studying, Bernard and me. Forgot to mention that we were help also. We received the help in this work of two undergraduate students. So that the other names here. So we were concerned by, interested by the problem of the transfer across a near-angular boundary, diffusive transfer across a near-angular boundary. I don't know why my what was really the main concern is how do you, when you have diffusing particle in a steady state regime in a domain, and that this particle somehow reach a near-angular boundary on which they will react, or they will, or something will happen, they will disappear, they will cross the interface. How this system will work in overall, and this is a. Okay, I cited a few fields, a few domains here in physics or in biology or in chemistry. Well, this kind of problem is really of a great concern. But since we are in physics, in fact, the boundary itself, what interested us was not only its shape and what was the influence of its shape, but also the fact that it was semi-resistive. Or semi-permeable. That means that if you would have a perfectly permeable interface, then it would lead to a boundary condition that would be a Dirichlet boundary condition. For an interface that would be perfectly reflective, that would be a Neumann boundary condition. That means d phi over dn equals zero. But in the reality, in real physics, we deal with finite things. And here, if we have a finite resistance to cross the membrane, or finite kinetic chemical reaction, or if you have a finite permeability, then what you end up with, it's very easy to show that what you end up with is this mixed boundary condition, and alpha being something that represents somehow the competition between the transport in the bulk and the transport on the for the activity across the interface.
Now with poisoning, then you want the alpha to depend on T.
Also, yes. Yeah. Yes. But right now I will be interested in steady state, so there will be no poisoning, I hope. There have been a lot of work in this field, starting with Hasse in the 80s. And really, what matters here is not only when you have an infinite chemical kinetics of chemical reaction of infinite permeability, you have a Dirichlet boundary condition, and what really matters are the probability to reach this in the regular interface from a far distance source. That means that will be the harmonic measure. But if you have a finite permeability, if you have this parameter alpha, which is finite, that means on the microscopic scale that you have somehow a finite a probability for a particle reaching the boundary to be reflected. So somehow the game is that coming from a far distance source, you have the particle that come, they land on this boundary with the harmonic measure, and with a certain probability they are absorbed, so it's the, this measure is absorbed, and with a certain other probability they are reflected. And the this measure is sent back to the bulk, through the Brownian bridges, and comes back to the surface. And there you have another measure, and this has a certain probability to be absorbed and a probability to be reflected, and again and again and again. So what really matters to understand the properties of an interface with a finite resistance or a finite permeability is to understand these Brownian bridges. So I must say that the continuous counterpart of this probability to go from one side to another is the Dirichlet to Neumann operator, and this was mostly the subject of the thesis of Denis. So what we were interested in fact, was trying to have the fuzzy idea was, what would be an interface that would maximize somehow the trapping of its reflected boundary, the reflected boundary bridges. So what would be somehow the best or the fastest interface for this game? And because in the limit of large resistivity, essentially this thing will play a role. And what was the driving force behind that? As somehow the DLA, so I won't present the DLA here, I'm pretty sure that everybody here knows what DLA is the DLA a finite realization? If somebody doesn't know, I can explain it very fast. So this is a realization of DLA for a finite number of particles. This is a DLA for a large, very large number of particles. And somehow the DLA would be the structure that has the best capture of particles coming from infinity, the best cross-section. So the idea, what about the same, but for particles coming from the interface itself. So what would be the interface that would have the best cross-section? So let's put this in more formal terms. We take as in the case of a DLA, we are put in C or Z to the square if we are on the lattice or every other lattice. And the idea is you have a domain like this, which is a simple connected domain. And what is the shape of the interface? What is the shape of the interface if you have, let's say, a finite volume inside? So we take a large number of particles. Since we are in physics, we are dealing with things that are a smaller cutoff. So you have particles that are a smaller cutoff. So you have many, many particles like this. You can build any single connected domain that you want. What would be the shape of the domain that would recapture its own Brownian bridges in the fastest and the most efficient way? So that would be somehow the question.
But where do the, what is the measure from which the Brownian bridges leave the shape?
The uniform measure.
Uniform measure on the boundary.
As in the token measure. Because, you know, the idea is that something is going on the surface, but it doesn't depend on what is at infinity or far distant source. It's a very local. So all the surface is active, mm-hmm. and all the surface can send particles or send Brownian bridges. So this is a very difficult problem to address as such. So the idea we had was a strange idea, an idea of physicist or maybe a Darwinian idea, some idea of a fixed point. Instead of having Brownian walkers that goes from the interface to itself, let's apply this probability, this Dirichlet domain operator, to the interface itself. That means let's pick up a point here, a particle, and send it through Brownian motion and put it again there. So if let's make the interface state feature, would that have some kind of extremal or optimal properties in terms of running bridges? So the real idea was to make the interface evolve under its own DLT domain operator. So a given geometry gives a distribution of running bridges, and these bridge running bridges will modify the geometry. So is there a fixed point, an equilibrium state? I think you would say an invariant measure. And what are these properties in terms of Brownian motion? So really the game is this one. You take a simple connected domain, here a field disk. You have the boundary, supposed to be in blue, but it's not exactly distinguishable. You pick a particle at random on the interface. You make it fly by Brownian motion. Once it goes on the interface again, you stick it. So, and there is one more constraint that you want to have, is the simple collectivity of your domain. So the structure must remain simply connected throughout the evolution. So in fact, in 2D, the very nice thing is that constraint is in fact a local criterion. If you have a point like this, we'll draw it in blue, because it's allowed to fly. If it goes away, it won't disconnect, let's say, the rest of the structure, maybe the structure is there. It won't disconnect the rest of the structure. If you have something, a configuration like this, where the neighbors of this point are in two disconnected sets, then that would mean that if you take away this point, it will disconnect the set. And as a matter of fact, you put the exactly the same constraint on the landing points. And if you put the same constraint on the landing points, what you will have is that you will have no loop. You will have that will mean that you will have a single connected domain. And in fact,
so you don't allow the fields to close off.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
You have what is really interesting for us was the shape of the interface as a continuous line, and we don't want it to break up in several parts in any way.
What does it mean to forbid a particle to land? Because then you have to ensure its continuation of the trajectory. How do you do it? I mean, should a particle?
The particle can go through.
Yes.
But it cannot stay there. It cannot stick.
So, but it can go through bottleneck.
Yeah. They can escape the bottlenecks with a very small probability, but they cannot stay in the bottleneck. So, this constraint is the constraint of no loop. In fact, it's the same as the constraint of no disconnection, but with the time reversal.
So in principle, you could imagine that somehow you have created a very long tunnel.
Yeah.
So that particle moves in, and then.
If you have a very long tunnel, the particle can move in and out.
Okay, and after some time, it can move out as well. Okay.
They can move. The probability is very slow. Is very low. They can. So that makes the evolution. Every single evolution that you see, elementary evolution, can be done backwards. So the process is reversible in theory. That is a small trick that we don't want to compute very large random walks. So we put a boundary. In fact, the boundary is not so close, but we put the boundary, and when the particle hit the boundary, then we set it back with the conformal transformation of the Cauchy distribution. It's a very simple trick to avoid to compute a very large light. But in fact, the boundary is very far from the structure, so it doesn't happen a lot. So let's now start the game. So we start from a field disk of 8,000 particles. This is the time counted in time unit of the time step. It's not very visible, I'm sorry. But time step, the time step is the time to diffuse from one side of the lattice to another. So this is the unit of the time step. So you see that the structure slowly evolves. You have a roughening of the surface at the beginning. But this is, if I would leave this as such, I think we would have to wait 1 month or so to end the seminar, so we'll fast a bit the simulation. So now we are talking in a million of times, unit times. So the structure is really, it's not obvious from here, but in fact it's a topologically it's always a simple connected domain, and what is in what are in black are the particles that are inside or not allowed to fly, and what are blues are the particles that are allowed to fly. So you create somehow the all what is all the interior slowly shrinks, and at the end all the structure will be on the in its interface. And if you go faster and faster, you do the same movie but faster and faster, you will see that here the holes inside are of the same dimensions at the beginning. But as soon as the structure has reached a topology where it has no interior anymore, then the small holes start to open. The structure unfolds slowly. And if you go fast, even faster, here we are speaking in terms of tens and hundreds of millions of unit time. So this the whole simulation took, it was 7 years ago, took more than 1 month on a powerful water station at the time. This would take at least a week on a regular PC nowadays, but yet, and here you have 8,000 particles only. So
that's a random tree.
Yes, you could it, yeah, you can call it a tree, yes. It's a, that's the topology of the tree.
Now somehow it became a stationary.
So, but in this way, no, but now that you have formed big holes, it stay there. You know, here it's it's almost 1 billion unit time, 2 billion, 3 billion. I will show you. It stays as such for only 8,000 particles.
But it seems to be expanding somehow.
It has expanded, and in fact, slowly, it has. It's the holes are growing, but the fact that I will show is that the fractal dimension, the scaling relation, stay the same. So the, in fact, I mean, speaking a bit ahead of the talk, but you know, you will have a topology with small gaps and small within larger small cages within so medium cage within larger scale cage. In fact, you have the process in which it evolves, where the small particles goes from the small to the medium cage, from the medium to the larger scale, but the scaling keeps the same for a very, very long time.
So I can still ask the question, because if you have a finite number of particles and this thing doesn't blow without limits, I mean, at a certain stage...
No. It's after being expanded like this, you will see what happens.
So might I ask, did you rescale that movie at all or not?
So in other words, the
shape then, the final shape is of comparable size to the initial shape.
Yes, but you have only 8,000.
Yeah, but it didn't seem to go up by a factor of 7.
No, a factor of 7 would have been difficult with 8,000 particles. Okay, so what are this is typical the steady state of what was what we call the steady state, because we had this in front of the eyes for a very large number large time, and the initial structure was a field disk. And here, the total duration of the simulation until we ended was a 3 billion time state. So what are the properties of the structure? First natural property that you want to look at is the mass, versus the distribution of mass in the structure. And if you do so, you plot the log of the mass versus the log of the radius, what you end up with is a power law, very nice power law scaling, it seems at least. And the slope here, it's a 1.7492, but in fact, it's wiggling a bit, so it's not, I didn't want to put anything close to 7.4, because we would think that you would see 7.4 everywhere in nature, but the fact is that it's very close to 1.75 all the time. So
did you count the number of branches? Is that evolving? Is that going down?
The number of branches, no, we didn't count that. But yes, because there are so many things to count. But
it's not going down.
No, definitely not.
Will be stationary, you think?
No. We'll see the answer. So for the triangular artist, we did the same, and we found also the same kind of, we found the same 1.75 around, because you would see that. But in fact, the story is not it was not the first time that people had the idea of making this time reversible. You had the work by Gauthier and Julien in the 80s that worked on a similar problem. And they obviously at the time they were working only with very small clusters. And they, in fact, the constraint not to disconnect the domain was that the particle allowed to fly were there attached only by one bond to the structure. Mm-hmm. It's how they ensured the fact that they wouldn't disconnect the structure. So it's a bit different. And what they ended up with was a structure. It looked like the structure at the steady state at 1.54. And rather at the same time, I think the team did a very similar algorithm, but it was in a thermodynamic bath, so it was a bit more complicated. I won't enter into the detail of that, but if I remember well, it was around 1.8.
Sorry, was this the same model as yours?
No. It's more complicated. Here, the model is you have low temperature, you have no energy, you have nothing. Simply the distribution of Bourdon bridges. So, if you want to have a very fast look at the properties of the structure, for example, this is the time of evolution of the structure. This is 2.5 billion unit times, and the correlation. This, what we plot here, are the correlation of the structure, the correlation where you label the particles, or the correlation where you don't label the particles. That means you look at the structure and you want to count how many particles are at the same site that they were at time zero. And this is the green function, the green function, not the function that is in green. And the function that is in blue is you simply count if these sites are occupied or not. So you simply you can allow a correlation if the structure overlaps. So this one goes to zero very fast. Each time you reset the zero time, and this one doesn't go to zero because obviously you have always a statistical overlap of the any kind of structure. But the fact is that the structure has almost no memory in time. And all the particles can fly, because here this correlation goes to zero. That means that you would think maybe that only the particle at the tip are allowed to fly because you don't want to disconnect the structure. But in fact, it's not the case. You have a wiggling of all the branches at all times, and in fact, very soon all the particles have left their initial position. So the structure is really losing its memory in time of shape very fast. And if you look closer, you have exponential decays of the correlation functions in space. And if you want to see the number of particles that are able to escape after a long time for the whole duration of the simulation, this was for another simulation, but it's a very large number, and it's comparable to the number of particles itself. So now the fractal dimension in time. So that is the evolution plotted between 1 and 2.5 billion. So you see that in this line is the mean. Here it's measured at 174. But you see you have for 8,000 particles, you have a lot of winning here. Like that. So, but the story is, I come back to this thing. So, what was the end? The problem was, how can we characterize the steady state? And the steady state, in the work of Gauthier Julien, it was a 1.54. And in fact, in 2002, people from, I think, the Max Planck Institute in Germany published a paper in PRL. In which simply they, since it's it was they simply put derived a master equation for the evolution of such a structure, and so I won't enter the detail, but essentially it's a Markov chain, because you have a structure, the evolution of the structure depends only on what is the topology of the structure at time t, and you have certain probability to go to other configurations. So you can derive a master equation, and since the probability to go, you have the uniform measure on the number of sites that are allowed to fly, that condition the evolution. And after, the probability, once you have chosen the particle, is simply the probability of the Brodmann bridges. And this is reversible from A to B and to B to A. It's reversible. And in fact, they were able to factorize, and this is the probability to go from one configuration to another by a Brodmann bridge once you have chosen the three particles. So the master equation was there. And in fact, for the steady state, it appears that this was not to derive the invariant measure. This was not relevant. The only thing that was important, that was the fact that the Brodmann bridges, the probability of the Brodmann bridges, was the same in both directions. So the idea was to say, okay, since the dynamics itself is not important, we take the fastest dynamic we can, and we pick point at random, and we put at random. That is another type of dynamics, and it goes very fast. And in fact, they have been able to derive that the invariant measure of this was what is called the lattice animals. Lattice animal of dimension 1.56. No, I would say a few words about lattice animal. So in fact, it has been demonstrated here that at the end, this should fall into the university class of lattice animal. The DRL process. Our model. And Botte and Julien as well. But Botte and Julien had found this, and they claimed in their paper that it was not the universality class of lattice animal, but in fact it was. It was the, yeah.
No,
on lattice, on square and hexagonal. But the simulation on square and hexagonal and triangular lattice gave the same results. So by the way, I thought for a long time that UCLA meant university class of lattice animals. I was told recently that it has something to do with Los Angeles. So what are the lattice animals? Lattice animal, well, it's the uniform measure on cluster of n sites, n connected sites, and the connected cluster on n particle in the embedded dimension. So there have been a lot of publication, a lot of work in this subject, and in fact, Strofer also did a lot of work. And it seems that almost everybody has a certain time in this small community did something on the lattice animal. So these are not supposed to be the bibliography of lattice animals, but mostly entry points if you want to see the results.
The lattice animals are all loops.
Now, in fact, in the universality, the scaling, no, they disappear. It's the same. In fact, it's the same as a branch polymer. So, and they are not isotropic. So they look very much the same than the polymer that Richard Kenyon showed the other day. But nothing to do with the kind of structure that we saw. Something was maybe odd here. But the story is not over, because it appears that, in fact, in 1992, Wessel and Ball published a paper in which, in PRA, in fact, they are exactly the same argument, the same master equation, and for the same kind of reversible DLA, what they find. And what they claim at the end is, in summary, we find that DL with disaggregation leads to an equilibrium regime in which all branch polymer configurations are equally likely to occur. So we have proved that DLA with disaggregation belongs to the equilibrium university class of lattice animals, and that this gross measure is homogeneous. So here, the good news and the bad news, as always. The good news is that even though it had been published in PRA, if the demonstration has been published in PRA 2008, 10 years ago, you can still hope to publish in BRL the same demonstration 10 years after. That is the good news. The bad news is that as a matter of fact, our problem was leading to the inner-city class of Latin animal. So, but what they also mentioned is it is possible that system may not be ergodic, inside some class of configuration may not be able to reach out others. However, we can, for example, say with confidence that all configuration we can be reached via irreversible delay will be equally likely in equilibrium ensemble. So, also they were cautious, so they put this claim that maybe there could be some non-ergodicity in the system. And in fact, if we go back to this, yeah, there's something wrong, you know, by simply saying, okay, we have solved the problem, the invariant measure or the steady state of this is the lattice animal. Because here we have 8,000 particles, and with 8,000 particles, we haven't been able to see the transition. And until this day, for 10,000 particles, it's almost impossible to see the transition of lattice animal. And but still it's proven.
What's wrong with, why don't you then start with the lattice animal as your initial configuration?
Ah, but that would perfectly be okay. We did some work like this, and it stays in the lattice.
Oh, it does.
There. Absolutely, the thing is right. But the fact is, you start with a compact structure, and you stay there for a billion of unit time for only 8,000 particles. So if you are in the world of physics, if you have 10 to the 23 or the 34, if you are very generous, with this, it means that something is wrong. If you are studying, if you're studying the invariant measure, you are studying something that you will reach after the age of the universe. So maybe you are not too concerned with the invariant measure. What you really want to know is the shape that you will see every day. So the problem is, why is it shaped? Because in terms of fractal dimension, the problem is that from the beginning, you start from a compact, so you are at two, and very quickly, very, very quickly, you go in this region of 1.75, 1.8, I want to 1.7, and you stay for a huge amount of time. So you have lost, say, 0.25 in a very short time, and after you have to wait the age of the universe to lose the 0.2 again. And the topology is not at all the same. So, yes?
Maybe something you could do, you could cut one of the big branches once you are there and see maybe 1, 2, 3, I don't know, and see if you really suddenly forward to the
Yes, I guess we did some other things also that I will mention after, but yes, it would work, I think. Also, the structure, in fact, what is our claim? It's a belief. We don't have any smoking guns. I don't want to say things that we have done yet, but you know, there are a lot of things that seems to prove to us. This, for example, is a fractal dimension measure for a cluster of only 500 particles. So it's very weird to speak about a fractal dimension in this case. It's a slope of the, let's call it the slope of the mass versus radius curves. It's the scaling exponent that is fitted for this. And what it gives you, it's kind of same thing. You have for a very long time something which is around this 1.75 or so, and after a certain time, it drops down and it goes there, but obviously you couldn't expect that you would have the 1.56. And by the way, this 1.56, you know, the lattice animal, they are moving a lot by this kind of, what you can expect as a fluctuation around this 1.56 are huge. So that's a problem. We also have a constant problem here of computation time. So what is the conjecture devolution is that maybe our structure goes very fast from the compact to the street structure and stay for a very, very long time in this shape. that has this not a steady state in terms of equilibrium, but it's a steady state in terms of physics. We see it, and it stays for a very long time. And eventually, we reach this kind of lattice angles.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
Did you possibly try to, in this intermediate state between 2 and 3, did you ever try to nucleate a droplet of lattice animal and see if it spread? I mean, so the step from 2 to 3 is tens of billions of time steps.
Yeah. Actually, in the same vein, I have another suggestion. Just cut your tree at the center, take all the branches, measure them as independent objects, and you should find the nucleus. Because you somehow you can't see it.
It's not so obvious because at the end of the talk I have 10 minutes to end the talk, so maybe I will tell you about that.
So and actually, if I could just make a comment too, because the model that we had in 99, same with you, is so similar, but we had a temperature and we saw that second regime happen very quickly. So we went initially to the 1.8, but then we went through the second regime where the temperature equilibrated and the structure started annealing rapidly. So we got to that. We got to like 1.6 because the branch points were quenched. So we saw that evolution happen really quickly by putting a temperature field in there.
And so here,
is it asking that the time span or lifetime of the individual state, how does it scale with n, the number of particles?
The lifetime of
the intermediate state, what is it?
That's a very good question. But the problem is that we can see it for 500 particles, and we can't see it for 5,000 almost. 5,000 is the limit. So we have draw a curve, but you will have one point there, and here for us it's infinity. So somehow it's a tricky game to derive anything.
So what's the theorem then? There's no equilibrium.
No, it's not an equilibrium.
No,
the invariant measure.
No, it's infinite, right?
No, I have another conjecture here.
So
I have another conjecture.
So
if you, where is the chairman? You will come this. I warn you. Okay, so the. So this is the evolution of the topology, and what I've plotted in green, it's a suggestion. This is a really hot simulation that have been done here because someone suggested me to plot the outer boundary of the structure. So really what goes on is that you have an outer boundary for a very, very long time that has this shape and that does not enter at all the structure. And eventually, when the structure seems to unfold and goes towards this transition toward lattice animal, you have the outer boundary that comes really into the structure. And you have huge fluctuation of the outer boundary. This has been done for 3,000 particles. That's why you can see this. And really, you have huge fluctuation of the outer boundary within the structure. So it's very hard to see, to have any evidence of this transition. And one of these can be the anisotropy, because the lattice animal, they are. I thought I had the transparency on that. It seems to have disappeared in the fight. So I will draw it for you. It's very simple. It's that you take the inner. What we have plotted here, we have taken the inertia matrix. You take the diagonal as the inertia matrix of the object. And what you compute is some kind of coefficient, dissymmetric coefficient, that will be zero if the object is isotropic, and that will be have a finite value otherwise. So that is, and somehow you see this is for a different simulation for 5,000 particles, and somehow in each of these simulations, sometimes it happens. It doesn't happen at all. Sometimes it happens at times that are very different. And this is confirmed by the eyes. So you see the structure unfold. And so you have some kind of fluctuation of the anisotropy. And after a while, it starts to be large. Here, it never did. And the structure was always symmetric. and here he did that this time. So the problem also is that, for your question, is that the time also is fluctuating a lot from one realization to another. So at this finite size, we have many problems. And if you plot the dimension in the anisotropy, that's our two realizations. So here you have the dimension, and I put here the lattice animal, the 1.75. Looks like it. You see that when it crosses this line and goes down, it's roughly at the time that the anisotropy starts to rise. And here it comes very quickly, and the anisotropy comes very quickly. So it's really, it's not a smoking gun, but really things go together. And what I will show you now, it's that what we have computed is the distribution of Brodmann bridge, because it's essentially this which is the base of our conjecture now for this evolution. These are the Brodmann bridge, the distribution of Brodmann bridge, that the same that Michel presented. So it's the integrated distribution for the distance, Euclidean distance. So that means that it should be like the exponent. The exponent here should be like d minus d. That's right. Minus d, and this is for the field disk at the beginning, for an hexagonal a triangular lattice. So what you have is this strange thing. So that would, for a field disk, the boundary is one dimensional. So you should follow this. But what you have in fact is that you have here is the distance, Euclidean distance 1 and 2, and you have some kind of finite effect because it's discrete. So these flights, the very short flight, they are not on the same line than all the others. But once the flight is larger than 3, you follow this minus 1 slope very nicely. And you end up, you have a larger cutoff, which is the diameter of the structure. You cannot have a flight which is larger than that. So it's really, in fact, it's the minus 1. And now I will show you the evolution of this. This is in this steady state, a long, very, very long steady state phase. Here it was the slope at the beginning, but in fact, this slope here, it's not this one, but this slope that goes up.
What is the dotted one, the other one?
Yes, the dotted one is something that was plotted by the undergraduate student, but it's not the correct one. This was the fit for the first, very first. But in fact, what you should follow is the diagonal here, which is minus 2. And in fact, roughly, this follows always minus 2. And if you make a numerics of it, out of it, you have a dimension which is minus 2. That would, if you follow the demonstration of Michel, that would... yes?
Dimension?
Equal.
The dimension is written here, something like 1 point.
Not.
It's not minus 2.
No, that. No. No, I think something is wrong here because it's not the correct.
But probably it's the dimension of the cluster.
No, it's not even the dimension of the cluster because I know on which it has been done. Okay.
Third dimension.
No, not the third dimension. No, because it goes No. But the movie has done to me, and they have given to me, and I showed a lot of mistakes in the movie, so I prefer to present you the curve. And here the curve, really, this is minus 2, and this is minus 2, and this is the curve, these are the curve for t, for the integrated distribution in time and integrated distribution in distance. In the DRA phase, that means in the, what is this very long steady state phase. And what you have is that you have this, the minus 2 slopes is very strange. Because if you follow the demonstration of Michel, it would mean that it's a dimension 2, the interface has a dimension 2, which is obvious, it's not the case. We plot it, it's 1.75. So somehow, it looks like the interface has a larger dimension for the Brodmann bridges than what you can measure for the mass. And what you have for the time you have this big bump here. What it means that, in fact, what happens really is that.
What did you measure the dimension of this of the cluster
What?
How did you measure the dimension? You did box counting everywhere?
No.
You started from the center.
Just from the center.
Then you give a lot of weight to the fact that it is right.
Got it. I don't understand.
But if you look at dimension in different domains, and if you start from the center, it might be different because you just do the need of growing the radius. Right?
Yes.
You give a lot of weight to the fact that it is centered somewhere.
Yes, we measured it exactly that as the scaling exponent of the mass as in the DLA case.
Right, but it's not what is valid for the Brownian path, because the Brownian path is maybe start at the outer boundary mass. At the end.
Yes, but we don't measure the Brownian path, we measure the structure itself.
Yeah.
So the Brownian
is scaled.
Yes, the structure is not Brownian path, it's really a symmetric structure. But so what really happens is that in fact the structure is made of cages within cages within cages, and what you have here is, and you have an outer boundary which is of which is much smaller in size than the structure itself. So you have most of the Brownian flight that are within the structure that are very short in fact, and the Euclidean distance. So it's very short, and the time are very short, and you have a few, very few, that goes from the outer boundary to the outer boundary, and those are really these ones that make a long time, but they don't make much of a distance because they cannot exceed the diameter of the structure. So what you see here, this bump here, are really the very long flight, and the thing is that the structure is evolving towards the lattice anemone only by this outer boundary. So the idea behind that is that maybe what can happen, what would happen is that you have somehow the dynamics in a, let's put it in some kind of a phase space where you have the domain where exists the compact structure, and not far you have this. And after you have the basin of abstraction of lattice anemone. And in order to reach that, they have to go in this through this shape, and to go from there to there, you can go only by these very long Brownian bridges that make really the structure evolve and make it elongated. And in the limit, the thermodynamical limit, if you have a very large structure, this outer boundary is of zero measure compared to what's inside. So in fact, the structure cannot evolve at the margin of it. So maybe what's happening is that if you go at the thermodynamic limit to very large number of particles, eventually the dynamic that you have put on the system, because all this is driven by the diffusion dynamics, will cut this from this. And what you will have is something which is not an equilibrium state, but which cannot reach the equilibrium state because the dynamics has been closed from here. So really that's and if you want to study something in physics, you have to study this, because unless you start from here, you won't arrive here. Yet we can discuss. So the conclusion are here. So eventually the RF process falls into UCLA, so I guess it makes sense. diffusion dynamics seems to be frozen by the Brownian bridges, and you have extremal distribution of Brownian bridges. And since the question I've been during the talk, I have two more things to show, because I think it's the future, it's not what we are working on now, is that in 3D, it's a possible model for concrete. Because I will go very fast, I will not enter the detail, and it's a project that we have started now at the lab, is because in concrete, what you have, and concrete is a very complex material, and concrete ages at all time scales, and the concrete you have after 24 hours, which is seems to be solid, has not the same mechanical properties than the concrete after 1 week, after 1 month, after 1 year, and even after 10 years. So it's very important to understand the mechanical properties and how at the macroscopic scale, what can be a model, a very schematic description of how the concrete is built. You have a chemical reaction that creates some kind of beads, and from these beads, you will have carbohydrates and reaction, and this will grow from the structure itself, they will grow these dendrites. So really the link here is that you are not dealing with the harmonic measure, but you are dealing with a growth where the source is are the beads itself. And eventually, what happens is that you have these branches that are interconnected, and that you can see here, these beads here, you can see on a microscopy, and you can see also this thing. So you will have an inner core which is stay here, but really the mechanical property of the concrete and why they are evolving at all time scale is that because this kind of interconnection is created and is evolving constantly. Exactly, not exactly, but a bit like in our case. And so we have simulation in 3D being done here. And I want to end with a movie of this structure. Okay, that are the DRI 3D, and that really the structure. But the fact is that the DRA in 3D is quite different because you know you have these dendrites, but the thing is that the topology is very different in 3D and 2D. If you are in 3D, you grow dendrites from here, you won't build such a cage. So the growing motion starting from here. It's much likely to escape. So it's not at all obvious that you will follow the same dynamics in 3D and in 2D.
Are you losing particles if they escape to infinity in 3D?
No, we are not losing particles because we send them back, and in fact it reflects the fact that in the concrete, the particles, if they don't land here, they will land very near, but in the other, in the vicinity. So, I guess that since I am the chairman of the next session, I have to stop here.